Taxi Now. For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
We don't know where to go. We have been displaced from one place to the next, and now we have left. We don't know where to go. We are running in the streets. I saw it with my own eyes. I saw the tank and the bulldozer. It is on that street.
Over 500,000 Palestinians have been newly displaced in Gaza over the past week since Israel launched an offensive in Rafah and escalated its attacks in the north. We'll go to Gaza to get a report on the ground. And as students across the United States call for universities to disclose and divest from companies with ties to Israel, we'll speak with the president of Union Theological Seminary. Its board of trustees has voted to endorse a divestment plan from companies profiting from war in Palestine, Israel. Then unbuild walls, why immigrant needs abolition.
Unbuild Walls is about breaking down the literal prison, jail, and detention center walls. It's also about breaking down the border walls, whether they're imaginary or real or digital.
We'll speak with Silky Shah, author of the new book, Unbuild Walls. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli bombs came down on the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza overnight, landing on a house and an UNRWA school housing displaced people. At least 14 people were killed, including children. Survivors desperately searched through the rubble for signs of life.
This is madness. They are targeting people, civilians. They have nothing to do with the resistance or with anything. They are children. I swear to God, they are children. She is the friend of my girl. They play together every day.
This is a worker with the UN refugee agency, UNRWA, that was hit in Nusayrat.
It happened around 2:05 a.m. in a place sheltering displaced people. They came to the school to be safe, and the school was hit without any warning. One of the school's staff members was martyred, and it seems that there is no place in the Gaza Strip. There is no power nor strength except with God. This is enough. It's enough. We ask God for safety.
Elsewhere in the Gaza Strip, Israeli grounds have surrounded evacuation zones and shelters in Jabalia as Israel escalates attacks in the northern region. A new Human Rights Watch report finds Israeli forces have attacked humanitarian aid convoys and buildings at least 8 times since October 7th, despite being given their coordinates and without warning. This comes as UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Monday called for a full investigation after a UN aid worker was killed and another injured when their clearly marked vehicle was attacked in Rafah as they traveled to the European hospital. More than 190 UN staff have been killed in Gaza since October 7th. Meanwhile, inside Rafah's European hospital, over 20 U.S. medical volunteers are now reportedly trapped and unable to return home after Israel sealed off the Rafah border crossing last week. Like many Gazans, the U.S. medical workers are now facing dehydration and other deadly health conditions. The Intercept's Ryan Grimm questioned State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel over the fate of the U.S. doctors.
What does it say about conditions more generally in Rafah and in Khan Yunis if American doctors only arrived there recently are already suffering from dehydration and malnutrition?
So, look, we have not been unambiguous about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. It is a crisis. No amount of humanitarian aid at this moment is enough.
The State Department spokesperson also criticized Israeli settlers who were seen in a video blocking a Jordanian aid convoy headed toward Gaza, throwing food into the road and setting fire to vehicles at the Tarkumia checkpoint near Hebron in the occupied West Bank. As the death toll in Gaza tops 35,000, Palestinians mourned Monday the killing of Hashem Ghazal, a disability rights advocate who was known as Gaza's godfather of the death. Hashem Ghazal was killed in an Israeli airstrike along with his wife. They had 9 children. 7 of them were reportedly severely injured in the strike. A U.S. Army officer working at the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, has resigned to protest what he called the United States' unqualified support for Israel's war on Gaza. Major Harrison Mann wrote in a post online that the U.S. has, quote, enabled and empowered the killing and starvation of tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians. He went on to write, quote, as a descendant of European Jews, I was raised in a particularly unforgiving moral environment when it came to the topic of bearing responsibility for ethnic cleansing. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz is reporting at least 10 Israeli officers and soldiers have died by suicide since October 7th. The total number of suicides is likely even higher, since the list does not include soldiers who died after they were discharged. Michael Cohen took the stand Monday in Donald Trump's criminal election interference trial and testified that Trump, his former boss, instructed him to make a $130,000 hush money payment to Stormy Daniels in order to protect his 2016 presidential run. The arrangement, which was made between Cohen, Trump, and then Trump Organization CFO Alan Weiselberg, included a plan to reimburse Cohen for the payment, which involved falsifying business documents by classifying them as legal expenses, falsely claiming they were payments to Cohen for his services as Trump's, quote, personal lawyer. Michael Cohen, Trump's former fixer, told the court, Trump said, quote, women will hate me. This is going to be a disaster for the campaign, unquote. Cohen also said, quote, he wasn't thinking about Melania. This was all about the campaign, unquote. According to Cohen, Trump also urged him to drag out negotiations with Daniels past the November election, saying, quote, if I win, it has no relevance because I'm president, and if I lose, I don't really care, Trump said. Democratic senators say it's highly likely they'll investigate the former president following reports that Trump told oil executives he would enact environmental policy rollbacks in exchange for $1 in campaign contributions. Trump reportedly made the offer at a dinner at Mar-a-Lago last month. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's in Ukraine on a surprise visit and his first trip to Kyiv since Congress approved $61 billion in additional military aid to Ukraine. Blinken's trip comes days after Russia launched a new ground offensive targeting Ukraine's Kharkiv region. In Australia, former military lawyer and whistleblower David McBride was sentenced to over 5 years in prison for sharing classified material about Australian war crimes in Afghanistan. The sentencing comes 7 years after ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, published the leaked information in a report called the Afghan Files. In related news, a court in London is expected to rule next Monday on whether to accept U.S. government assurances that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will receive First Amendment protections if extradited to the U.S. and put on trial for espionage, and that he won't be executed if found guilty. In Brazil, the death toll from ongoing flooding in Rio Grande do Sul has reached 147. Over 100 people are missing. 500,000 others have been displaced. Authorities warn more floods and landslides could be on their way as rain continues to plague the southern state. This is a resident in one of the stricken towns.
I'll be quite honest. I think that in the future, Mussum will become a river. This flood left a lot of soil, a lot of sand, took a lot of trees into the town. We really have to think that this is going to be very difficult for us to live here.
Climate protesters disrupted the Italian Open on Monday. Members of the group narration poured white paint and threw confetti on the tennis court during a match, while other activists cemented their feet to the stands. The action comes as Italy is facing a major drought. Back in the U.S., over 5,000 workers at two Mercedes-Benz plants in Alabama are voting this week on whether to join the United Auto Workers Union. Workers say Mercedes has repeatedly engaged in union busting, and Republican leaders, including Governor Kay Ivey, have also tried to stymie their efforts. But UAW says it believes workers will prevail as it hopes to see its second major victory in the South since Volkswagen workers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, voted overwhelmingly last month to join the union. Last night, workers of the Hyundai plant in Alabama joined Reverend William Barber's Moral Monday Mass in Montgomery to push their own union campaign.
We give our all to the company, but we have no pension, no retiree, no health care. This is just wrong, and we're going to try to make things right.
That's right.
When we win our union.
And in other labor news, unionized workers at the University of California have begun voting to authorize a strike to protest the violent crackdown on Gaza encampments at UCLA and other UC campuses. The UAW said, quote, "Our members have been beaten, concussed, pepper sprayed, both by counter-protesters and by police forces," unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
More than 500,000 Palestinians, nearly a quarter of Gaza's population, have been displaced over the past week alone, according to the United Nations. Over 450,000 people have fled Rafah since Israel launched an offensive on the city, with another 100,000 displaced in the north amidst escalated bombing and ground attacks. Humanitarian organizations say they're struggling to provide dwindling supplies of food, tents, and blankets to the large numbers of newly displaced. In a social media post today, the UN Refugee Agency, UNRWA, said, quote, "People face constant exhaustion, hunger, and fear. Nowhere is safe. An immediate ceasefire is the only hope," unquote. No food, aid, or fuel has entered the two main border crossings in southern Gaza for the past week, since Israeli forces entered Rafah and took over the border crossing there. Some 1.1 million Palestinians in Gaza are on the brink of starvation, and a full-blown famine is taking place in the north, according to the UN and the World Food Program. By some accounts, a number of hospitals are on the brink of having to shut down major departments due to a lack of fuel and supplies. Gaza's government media office says hospitals are no longer operating in the north, while in the south, the Kuwaiti hospital in Rafah has received an evacuation order from Israeli forces. Doctors and nurses are resisting that evacuation order because they don't want to leave their patients. This comes as Gaza's civil defense teams are struggling to reach victims trapped under the rubble of bomb buildings as daily airstrikes continue. At a news conference today, a spokesperson for the civil defense said Israeli forces continued targeting of heavy equipment that its teams used to recover victims in the rubble, in addition to a severe fuel shortage, may soon bring rescue efforts to a total halt. At least 82 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza over the last 24 hours. The death toll after 7 months of Israel's assault has now topped 35,000 Palestinians killed, including over 14,000 children. Nearly 80,000 people have been wounded. For more on the latest, we go to Gaza to speak with journalist Akram Al-Sattari. He's joined us multiple times over the past several months from Rafah in the south. But today he's joining us from outside the Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Akram, welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain the move from Rafah to Deir al-Balah. Talk about the situation with the hospitals and the number of people, nearly 500,000, who are on the move once again.
Thank you. Good morning, Amy. Good morning from Gaza. Good morning from Shuhada Al-Aqsa Hospital. To start speaking about the situation, I would portray to you and all the viewers a situation that was taking place not far away from me. Few yards in the background, there were some mothers, sisters, daughters, and grandmothers also weeping over the death of their dears. Not far away from me is the morgue of the hospital where people come to claim the bodies of their dear. Once some of them are lucky enough to find the bodies of their dears, some others are not lucky enough to have that privilege. In Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, a house was targeted, was reduced to rubble. 30 people were killed overnight. Some of them were retrieved. Some other people are still under the rubble of the houses that were destroyed. People are frantically trying to retrieve the bodies of their dears and of their relatives. We went there. We saw the destruction. We saw the suffering. We saw the people frantically trying to retrieve the bodies of their dears. And one of them was happy to find the body of his relative. The house was the house was sheltering internally displaced a family that was displaced for around 8 times, Amy. 8 times in Gaza, 1 time from the Gaza North to Gaza City, 1 time from Gaza City to Gaza Central Area, another time from Gaza Central Area to Khan Yunis Area, and a third and a fourth time from Gaza Area to Rafah Area, and then from Rafah Area to another area in Rafah that was deemed safe according to the prescription of the Israeli occupation forces. People have been moving. People have been hopeful that they would survive, thinking that following the orders of the Israeli occupation forces would make them safe. However, they were shocked, and I don't think they had the time that is enough for them to be shocked. They were targeted. They're killed. Most of them were retrieved, and many of them are still under the rubble. That describes the exact situation in the Gaza Strip, the way people are living for the last 7 months, the way displacement has been weaponized when it comes to dealing the largest population of the Gaza Strip. People were killed, people are dead, people are displaced, people are losing their dears, people don't have enough food, people are suffering to secure anything that has to do with a normal life in Gaza. And those people are now described by Israel as people who were treated with dignity, and that this war is the most civilized one on earth in the history of the mankind. The things that we are seeing, the way we are being treated, is far away from being a human way. People are treated as a herd of sheep that is being herded by a shepherd who has no mercy whatsoever and who is dictating whatever he wants or she wants, because they have the ultimate power to do things, and they have the ultimate power to destroy anything they want with the most sophisticated technology they have been moving. They have been very happy and proud about the artificial intelligence they have been using for the sake of just identifying who's combatant, who's non-combatant. Unfortunately, the statistics from the ground explains how shocking the way people are being targeted. Mothers are killed with their sons, fathers are killed with their daughters and sons, whole families wiped out, and even now in Rafah area, in the east, west, south, and now and north in Rafah, in the Gaza south area, in the Gaza north area, in the Gaza central area, non-stop bombardment, and people who were asked to leave Rafah are now in Gaza central area or in Khan Yunis, and they are still seeing with their own eyes. I mean, again, the lucky ones who are surviving the bombardments are seeing with their own eyes that there is no safe haven in Gaza Strip. This is the one major risk enveloping the lives of the people of Gaza. However, starvation is one more equally important threat that challenge that the Palestinians are seeing. Those people who have been living this displacement, destruction, and fear for the last 7 months are now struggling to secure water for their children. To start with the water, because water is the gift of life, and water is not available in Gaza. Water desalination plants were destroyed. I live in an area that is called Hamad City. There were 4 wells to serve the whole area, around 137 residential towers. Around 98 of those towers were destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces, including the 4 main facilities that have to do with the water desalination or water treatment. People are staying there. They have no water. They have to fetch the water. They have to go for around 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers or to contact some suppliers who find a great challenge in just getting the water to the people because of the lack of fuel. So no infrastructure, no food supplies, no water supplies. No medical consumables or medications allowed into the Gaza Strip, and people are left there to face that unconceivable situation when it comes to the access and protection. The whole population is not protected, and the whole population of 2.37 million Gazans are facing this critical problem of not being able to access anything decent, neither the shelter nor the supplies of any kind, and they are left to do that, and the ones who are targeted are just killed, and others, tens of thousands of Gazans are injured, and the ones who are injured are unable to go to the hospitals because hospitals are already out of services. The Al-Kuwaiti hospital was communicated with by the Israeli occupation forces. They asked them to leave the area. The area itself is part of the area that was asked to leave by the Israeli occupation forces. The situation continues to be very dire. People even with normal health diseases are not able to access the hospital, are not able to find a proper medication for their wounds or for their diseases or for whatever things they need, and they end up facing that type of slow death, which means they don't have access to food, they don't have access to water, they don't have access to supplies of any kind, and they are still suffering. And that speaks for the people in Gaza South, in Gaza North, in Gaza Central area. They, people, cannot get anything decent to help them survive, and they are afraid also of the major situation, the death. And as I'm talking to you now, you can hear the ambulance coming, apparently with more people who are injured because of the ongoing bombardment in Gaza Central area that is not witnessing major ground operations as described by the Israeli occupation forces. So the whole situation is dire, is extremely catastrophic, is aggravating into something extremely ugly, unacceptable, and unbearable, is not justifiable according to the dictates of international humanitarian law, nor the international law, and the instruments that have to do with the dignity of the people, with the safe and sound access to resources at the times of conflict. People have been deprived from that decent access for around 17 years now because of the strict blockade that has been imposed on the Gaza Strip. And now they're being targeted, they're being deprived, they're being displaced, and they don't know what next is going to happen. They are afraid from death. They are afraid from hunger. They are afraid from the very lacking situation they have been living, and they don't know what the future holds for them.
Akram, I wanted to ask you mentioned northern Gaza. The Israelis had claimed that they had pacified the area. Many people have started to come back. Now they're attacking again. What are you hearing about what's happening in northern Gaza?
Northern Gaza has been seeing a large-scale ground operation. Israeli occupation forces declared that they have won the war in Gaza North. They declared that they have destroyed Hamas power, and now they're coming back apparently to win again Hamas up till some certain time when they will come back one third time to also win again. They came back to Gaza North. They targeted Az-Zaytun neighborhood. Az-Zaytun neighborhood was declared as a clear area from Hamas like around 3 months ago, and now they're coming back there. They are conducting a major operation. They're using three battalions in that fight, three brigades in that fight, and they have been attacking the infrastructure. The image that is coming from Az-Zaytun area shows very comprehensive and intensified bombardment. Whole blocks are in smoke. The horizon is filled with black smoke, which is indicative of the ongoing fires resulting from the ongoing bombardment. And with that ongoing bombardment comes the ongoing death and destruction and injury resulted to the people. And people who are living there are also having this extremely serious problem of not having enough access to the ambulances, enough access to the hospitals, enough access to primary health care clinics, and the Palestinian Ministry of Health, the Palestinian Civil Defense, the UNRWA, the World Food Program, all the international organizations have been voicing their concern over the safety of the people, over the safety of the people who might be injured and might end up dying because of the fact that there is no vehicles to go and collect them and take them to the hospitals. The situation is extremely catastrophic in the sense that the civil defense forces, the civil defense crews are not able to move their vehicles because of the fact that Gaza and Gaza terminals have been seized by the Israeli occupation forces for the last 8 days. And before that, there was the Jewish Passover vacation, and there were 11 days of total disruption of the supplies into the Gaza Strip. And then 4 days after that, the supplies were extremely slow. So people are suffering. They are deprived from everything, and the ones who are injured, and the ones who are seeing now the ongoing fight or the ongoing destruction in Az-Zaytun area are asked to move to another area further inside Gaza City. And then that other area is targeted. We have been hearing the recent news about the bombardment and the 10 of people killed and a bombardment or a strike that took their lives, and then another 8 people, and then 10 people, and then 5 people, and then 2 people, and then 3 people, and a mother, a child, and her son. So it is extremely catastrophic, and people are moving, and they're hoping that they would survive, but unfortunately, many of them are not surviving. They're hoping to keep their shelter, but unfortunately, they end up being killed in the shelter that has been also reduced to rubble on their head. They are hopeful that they would be treated once they are injured. Unfortunately, they cannot access any health care, and they have been left with that suffering for such a very long time now, and they are unfortunately expecting to see more of the same today and tomorrow and in the coming days, with no ceasefire reached and with the international community failing to do something that would change the dynamics when it comes to that kind of continuous escalation and conflict.
And Akram, now that Israel has gained control of the Rafah crossing as well, is there any, are any of the wounded or any people who want to leave Gaza able to do so, and also of the foreigners who are there?
No human being whatsoever is allowed to cross Rafah crossing or Kerem Shalom crossing. In the second day of that seizure of the border, a truck was summoned by the Israeli occupation forces for a transporter that is known, unidentified, and recognized by the Israeli army. They went there. 10 people went there. 6 of them were shot by the Israeli army, and the truck that was supposed to enter Gaza did not enter Gaza. So it's a full and complete closure of the border. No foreigners, no Gazans, no one is allowed to move from that area, and no supplies whatsoever have been entering that area ever since this whole process started in Rafah and Kerem Shalom area.
Akram, this is going to be our last question. I just want to emphasize to people how rare it is to hear a reporter inside Gaza. So we thank you so much for this report. Now, you have moved out of Rafah. Is this the full ground invasion of Rafah that we're witnessing? And also, can you comment on the civil defense group that held a news conference today saying that Israel is targeting their heavy machinery that helps to get people out of the rubble, that they are increasingly unable, also not having fuel, to save people from the rubble, where it's expected over these months there are over 10,000 people at least buried, but continuing each day.
Reporting from Gaza, to start with, reporting from Gaza, Amy, is a great challenge for me and for every single reporter who's in Gaza. We're part of this fight. We're made to be part of this fight by the Israeli occupation forces, although our job as journalists is to provide as accurate and sound image about the situation as we can. And we have been trying. We are humans and we are Gazans. And we are suffering just like those other peoples. We have this problem with accessing food and water, with accessing supplies, and we are struggling, but we are willingly undertaking that responsibility because this is a moral and national obligation to start with. And then when it comes to the Palestinian civil defense, it's not only the Palestinian civil defense heavy ministry that is being targeted. Also, the Gaza municipality heavy machinery is being targeted by incendiary materials. There were some reports for the last 2 months and a half of Israeli quadcopter pouring some incendiary materials over those heavy machinery and targeting and burying them. I think the way things are being done now is a way that with an ultimate objective of crippling all the humanitarian relief systems in Gaza, leaving people extremely vulnerable and exposed to bottlenecks because of that ongoing operation. And I think they're trying to prepare the Palestinians for full subjugation by doing that. When we have been hearing about this issue north, Gaza City, and also in the Gaza South, the way the Israeli occupation is dealing with the heavy machinery that is supposed to be doing the leveling work for the sake of just helping the people and also removing the rubble. We have around 10,000 Gazans who are still under the rubble, who are still, their condition is unknown. Absolutely, they are dead, which makes the number, the true number of people dead, 45,000, not 35,000. 10,000 people are still under the rubble. Some of them are under the rubble for 7 months, 7 whole months, bodies are under the rubble. Very close friend of mine was also under the rubble for 3 months. 3 months and a half, he and his mother, and no heavy machinery, no excavators, no vehicles of any kind were allowed into Khan Yunis area, and he ended up being retrieved after 3 months and a half. This is one story of tens of thousands of a story of misery and fear, of non-mercy over the life of the